Sir, what must I do to be saved? Probably the most important question in all of Scripture. Stay tuned for Abounding Grace Radio.
Proclaiming the good news to a needy world. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Understanding how we are saved is the great aim of all of the Bible. Today we're going to consider that on Abounding Grace Radio from 2 Kings chapter 5 in the Old Testament. Here we have the entire plan of salvation, all the themes that we see in the Gospels laid out for us in this Old Testament passage with Naaman the Syrian. Hopefully this is a great blessing to you on Abounding Grace Radio today to understand salvation and the riches of Jesus Christ. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Please visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. Our number is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. Find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. And we're so thankful you take time out of your day to tune in to Abounding Grace Radio. If you can't support us, 100% of your support goes to continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you and to many listeners in this nation, in Canada, and even in Africa. So we're thankful in advance for all of your prayerful and your financial support. You can do that right online at agradio.org. Here is now the program from 2 Kings chapter 5, which I have titled, What Must I Do to Be Saved? This is part one. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. What is unique about it is how here we have every theme that we know in the New Testament unfold for us. It's not that the Old Testament doesn't have these themes, but we see something, as Krumacher said, of the character of the one who would come and preach the gospel of peace, Jesus himself. We see here how life is given. We see the struggle of bringing somebody to the place of saving faith. We see it go out to the nations. We see all the themes that we study in our Heidelberg Catechism of guilt, grace, and gratitude unfold right here. And I thought this would be a wonderful passage to help us look at this morning. This great story of salvation, of redemption, the whole Bible teaches us, especially as we come to the table now and enjoy these things in fulfillment, which Elijah's ministry somewhat captures. But what happens here with Naaman anticipates this ministry that is being offered to you, this ministry of reconciliation that God has entrusted to us, and therefore it requires a kind of response that is important that we take seriously too. So how much then we can learn from this already in the Old Testament about the ministry that we enjoy, the new covenant, how much this passage will challenge us to see our struggle in the person of Naaman, our problem, our need, and how great God's sovereign grace is and is working to remedy the problem, to bring us into the kingdom, and to understand in fulfillment Jesus' words, he came to seek and to save that which was lost, all that is unfolded for us right here in this passage. And this, of course, as we see the incredible mercy of God unfold, demands a believing heart, especially as we come to his table this morning. As Elisha is fulfilling his ministry, the narrative turns here in the midst of it to the great nation. You'll notice here in chapter 5, to the great nation of Syria. It zeroes in on this one very powerful nation in the earth, the enemies of Israel, whom they had a long history of conflict and struggle with. And right at the beginning, we see that the Lord is doing something very unique here. Naaman, verse 1, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. A mighty man of valor. Within just a few sentences, we have every kind of accomplishment piled up and heaped on that this man has made, and is really remarkable how he's presented by the Holy Spirit himself under inspiration. Commander-in-chief of the Syrian army, powerful man. Syria was a military giant at this time. a powerful nation. He was a great man, it says. A great man with his master. The king loved this man. This man had achieved a lot for the king. Honorable, lifted up was Naaman. The greatest surprise in the narrative, though, the shame to Israel, is clearly in the statement, the shock, that, imagine reading this, by the Lord, by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. We read right over that. That would have been utterly offensive to the nation of Israel. That would have been somewhat perplexing to the nation of Israel. A surprise in this narrative that the Lord was working in this heathen nation and giving victory to them. Something that shamed them. And this is why I made the point right at the beginning that Elijah was, his ministry was anticipating something. Elisha's ministry was anticipating fulfillment of the Gentile nations coming in. In fact, the New Testament will use a lot of the themes of Elisha's ministry to chide the children of Israel for unbelief. Jesus used Elisha's ministry commonly to chide Israel. I'll come back to that at the end, and that will be a great application point for this particular passage and for us this morning. But for the present, nobody knew the Lord was doing this. Naaman was the most respected and powerful man in the eyes of the nation. He was treated as a god. He was lifted up. A mighty man of valor. It means strength. It means wealth. This man was rich. This man was strong. The text is really indicating to us, Naaman, there was nothing more he could have done in life. He achieved it. He was accomplished. He was wealthy. He was respected. Everyone bowed to Naaman when he walked by. A man of integrity. Everyone who knew the name Naaman spoke well of Naaman. A remarkable figure. Prestige, position, power. It's all set up, isn't it? At the very end of this long list of accomplishments comes a very brief, a very, very brief interjection. You notice it. Positive, 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 and then comes the hit. But he was a leper. He had leprosy. Leprosy, of course, you know and you've studied, was this infectious disease, disgusting disease, characterized by large scabs and sores where the skin would turn white underneath and it would begin to smell, and eventually those parts of the body would fall off. It would overtake your body from head to toe. Highly infectious, spreading very quickly, at times even eating the flesh to the bone. You really, we've kind of eradicated it here in the West, but it's a fascinating disease that the Bible often uses. In fact, the Bible gives constant attention to this problem of leprosy. You'll know something like Leviticus 13, when we have all these leprosy passages in the New Testament and Jesus dealing with lepers. Again, anticipation of Elisha's ministry. Notice in Leviticus 13, when the leprous sore is on a person, then he shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if the swelling on the skin is white, and it has turned the white hair white, and there is a spot of raw flesh in the swelling, it is an old leprosy on the skin of his body. The priest shall pronounce him unclean, and shall not isolate him, for he and shall isolate him, for he is unclean. What do we think of when we think of flesh-eating diseases? I'm always amazed as to how much attention the Bible gives this particular one. Leprosy. It gives a great focus on this particular disease and this particular sickness. It's hard for those who are healthy to appreciate it. It's hard for us to understand it. But the Bible has a lot to say about it. I often think that when we have so much emphasis given on something like this, something that has so much prominence of a particular disease and a particular sickness, every time the scriptures are calling us to pause, especially when we have Leviticus focusing it on it like this, and ask, what is God particularly teaching us about this disease? Why is God showing us this? It should go without saying that leprosy in the Bible has the peculiar function of teaching us what sin is like before God. If you don't draw this kind of connection throughout the scriptures with it, you really do miss the effect. You really do miss what these things are teaching us about spiritual problems, teaching us about real problems of life before God. There are, right now, in our lives, and this all fits in with the teaching of sin in general, but there are right now in our lives particular leprosies affecting us. There are particular sins that are polluting your life. There are particular sins that you give into. There are particular sins that easily master you. Sin is like that. It's a leprous. It's part of our nature. And what sins, you have to think about, do we hold on to in life? What sins do we cling to? What sins do we hold on to? We can generally say as pastors, we're all sinners. We've heard it all our life. But then to think about and be honest about what particular sins are dominating and mastering that we need to come to the Lord about and confess and deal with is a whole different approach, isn't it? What sins are you doing in secret? What sins are you hiding? What sins are mastering? That is leprosy in your life. It's real. And it works its way out to death. That's the path. What do you do with it? What uncleanness? The lepers in the Old Testament had to run around saying, unclean, unclean. Some people's leprosy has reached to the surface of their body so as to do public damage. In other words, their sin is brought out and open before all. So they live in, others live in denial about it and hide it. You have these paths constantly put out in front of us. The Lord either, some leprosies are evident to all. For many, that leprosy is hidden until they're forced to deal with it. Until they're forced to deal with it. Until it's done enough damage. You've taken enough risk with it. No matter at what stage you have, it's with you. It's leprosy. It's working its way out to destroy you. Sin's path always leads to death in the end. You're not getting away with a thing. You're not getting away with a thing. Until we feel that, we don't take these passages seriously. That's the bad, sick guy over there. It's not us. But that's exactly what these passages are intended to do. You are a leper. I am a leper before God. That's what sin is like. And the text is raising an insurmountable problem with Naaman. This guy had reached the top. He had gained the world. This guy was the most prestigious. This guy had wealth. He had honor. He had power. He was a man of valor. He had everything, but lived in this awful state of leprosy, working its way out to death. And he's a slave to find a solution to it. That's how the text is presenting him. He's a slave to find a solution to it. How many people get something chronic and their whole life becomes living to beat it, living to conquer it, to find the remedy, to find the solution, to find what's going to heal them. If medicine doesn't do it, we go to holistic. We'll go right down the line. Well, we know this on a physical level. And that's why all this is teaching us something very important about Naaman. The text at this point transitions to show us that God is working on the heart of Naaman. God is doing something very powerful in the life of Naaman that he wanted Israel to consider, that he wanted all of us throughout every time we read the scriptures to consider. there's something that had to happen to Naaman. The Lord gives us a glimpse here. The Lord is teaching us really about the entire teaching of Scripture of what must happen to somebody whom he is going to save and deliver, whom he's going to heal, to the place of receiving his gospel. They've got to come here. They've got to follow this path. This is the most plain path laid out before you that all the Scriptures teach us about salvation. We read in verse 2 that the Syrians had gone out in raids, and in the process they had brought it back this young slave girl from the land of Israel, and she was a servant to Naaman's wife. She was in Naaman's house. She was a slave, this little girl pulled away from her home. Powerful thought, isn't it? And the slave girl observed Naaman's restless nights. She observed Naaman's real struggle, this little girl. And she makes a beautiful comment, an offhanded comment, but an intentional, beautiful comment to Naaman's wife. If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would heal him of his leprosy. I'll come back to this. What a glowing testimony from a little girl. A believing little girl in the narrative. Naaman hears this, and he runs to the king. The king says, well, then we'll solve this. I don't like those Israelites much anyways. He writes a demand letter, doesn't he? Now listen up. I'm sending Naaman to you. You know who Naaman is. He's going to come with all of his military chariots, and he's going to arrive on your doorstep, King of Israel. Be advised when this letter comes that I've sent Naaman to you that you may heal him of his leprosy. End of it. You better do it. So the healing has come with a demand letter, a threat letter. And now Naaman begins to pack up. Naaman begins to pack up, and he loads himself up with 10 changes of clothing, and he loads himself up with all kinds of gold and silver, and he's going to present a gift to the one who will heal him. Well, not really. When you have a demand letter, you're coming to pay for this thing, aren't you? The king hears this and falls apart. He wants to quarrel with me. He's seeking a quarrel. And so he says, who am I to make alive? I'm not God. I can't do that. And here is the prophet of Samaria who hears. Elisha hears the king of Israel respond this way. And in verse 8, he responds. But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes? Let him come now to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Samaria. I like to stand back from all of this and think about everything that has happened here. This is a real moment. For the next scene that we have presented to us is this great King Naaman with all the military chariots arriving now on Elisha's doorstep, the most powerful commander of the Syrian army everyone feared, comes under direct commission and command from the king of Syria with a threat letter and money to pay for it. It's a great moment. You see the themes sort of all converge here. What is the mentality always of the rich? This is why Jesus gave so much attention to it in the New Testament. How hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. What is the mentality of the rich? They can buy anything, can't they? It presents a peculiar problem in dealing with salvation, and that's why Jesus wanted to use it. The rich have always been able to buy whatever they want. And because of that, it's really hard to accept God's economy of grace. It just doesn't work. So pride becomes the real focus of this particular narrative. which again, if I had time to develop the Elijah narratives, I'd show you how much this is all working on Israel and showing certain things to Israel. But I have a specific intention this morning of the supper and aiming for that. I want you to notice how the Lord is working here. What a humble path he has put this man on. It's a remarkable thing. We have letters from king to king. We have Naaman, a top-ranking official in the Syrian government with riches and gold and silver and status and power and wealth. But the answer came from where? A little girl. A little slave girl. A little girl proposes the remedy. That's just how God works, doesn't he? And you see sort of what is unfolding and what he's doing here. Where did the answer come from? A totally unlikely answer came from a totally unlikely, weak, powerless source. But God has so put him in a situation, he has nowhere else to turn. He had no other option but to listen. Does your leprosy have to come out that far for you to get there? This is an important question, isn't it? That finally you'll listen? Would we ever be willing to stoop down so low enough to listen to a little girl with an apron on? Would we really think that an answer could come from a little girl, the answer of life to our problems? Well, I think you know the answer to that. Everything the Lord does is backwards. Always has been. To our thinking and reasoning. Be careful of not listening to the little girl's voice. Be careful of not listening to that little girl's voice. And little girls, speak your faith. Speak your faith. What an encouragement to you. The Lord publishes his way through an unexpected means and ways, situations that will test you. That will test you. You think it's going to come this way, this way, this way, this way. This is how I'm going to get it. This way, this way, this way. And it never happens that way. Ever. Back to Elisha. God could have sent Elijah right to Naaman's door. God could have sent Elisha over to Syria. But nope, Naaman has to make the long journey in his proud chariots, expecting to pay and to get. This is the rich young ruler, of course, running to Jesus. I don't doubt this is how many people come to the Lord today. I've made a sacrifice to be here. I have money in hand. There's a lot of pride in all of us. A lot. We think God does owe us something. It's there. We've put a lot in. We're overall moral. A lot of accomplishments. Doesn't this say it? Elisha. Meet Elisha. Verse 10. So Elisha sent a messenger to him. Stop. You did what? You come out and greet such a figure, Elisha. You don't do this to the king's most powerful commander of the army. Out comes a messenger. And the messenger begins to speak. And the way is proposed in verse 10. Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh shall be restored. Go wash in the Jordan 7 times and you'll be clean. Naaman is furious. Verse 11. Absolutely furious, Naaman was angry and went away saying, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? Naaman had expectations, of course, didn't he? If I'm going to make this great trip to Israel, if I'm going to go out to Israel to this prophet, I expect things. He better at least greet me. I have a lot to offer. He came to Elisha thinking that Elisha would heal him just how he had determined he would heal him. This is a faith healer, isn't it? He'll just wave his hand, do a little magic, and it's gone. He's going to come out, and he's going to wave the hand. That's how it's going to go. Here come the chariots. Here come the mighty men. Here comes the presidential escort, all the cabinet. All of them are standing out there. And they park in front of Elijah's lowly house. He doesn't even come out. He doesn't even come out. This guy insults me. I've just made this trip. All this, he wants me to go get down on my knees in that filthy, stinking Jordan River?
You've been listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll free at 888-504-8805. Once again, 888-504-8805. Or contact us on the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. Connect with us on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station or subscribe to the AG Radio podcast in iTunes or use our free Android app. Thanks for listening. And remember, where sin abounded, grace abounded more.